the bonus interview episode of Dogs Are Smarter Than People, the usually quirky podcast that gives writing tips and life tips. I'm Carrie Jones, and with me today is Holly Schindler. Holly is an award-winning cross-genre author, a dog lover, a coffee addict, and I'm pretty sure she might even have a PhD. Here's a nice quirky detail about Holly. She likes to write under the Missouri shade trees. Holly, I am so glad and honored to have you here with us today. Thank you.
I'm so glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Holly and I are both talking to you when we're kind of in isolation because of the coronavirus or COVID-19. And so you may hear random moments from our households, like dogs or cats or children or spouses or something, or oil trucks. So I hope you all bear with us because Holly is super cool and she has a lot to say. And first off, Holly, I wanted to ask you, you've been writing since you were a little girl, haven't you?
Absolutely. Yeah. I can remember even in the first grade, I had a little roll top, kind of child size roll top desk in my room. And I used to write stories and illustrate them and tie them all together. So, this has pretty much been a lifelong dream. Went to school for English, studied literature and creative writing all the way through. So, I mean, it was something I knew I wanted to do since I was little. Yeah.
And you never swerved from your course, from that quest to be a published author, to write stories, to have people read them. Has it always just been a straight line for you?
It hasn't been, bump free. I always knew I wanted to do it. The thing that really set me off, that put me on the right track, I got my master's degree. And I had always wanted to do it. It was just, from day one, I knew it was what I wanted to do. And mom said, just stay here and I'll feed you and you write. And she said, because there was, you have this thing you want to do and you shouldn't be out, dividing your time. She said, I know what happens. You get a job and your entire life revolves around this job. And she said, I'm afraid it'll take, time and attention away from your writing. So she said, just stay, I'll feed you, you work. And also at that time I was paying my bills. I was really lucky. I got out of school debt free. So that also really helped, between scholarships and, family help. I got out debt free. But to pay the bills I did have in the afternoon, I was teaching music lessons. I would teach. It was kind of the perfect setup. I'd get up early in the morning and I'd write all day. And then at 3 o'clock, the kids would get out of school and I'd teach piano and guitar lessons until time for dinner. And the cool thing that happened while I was doing that, I was drafting all of my manuscripts at that time were adult manuscripts. And when I started interacting with those kids, I had, kind of middle school age kids. I had real young elementary school kids. And I did have a few that were high schoolers. And when I was interacting with them, I realized how familiar the whole, middle school, high school experience really was. It hadn't changed much. We'd had a technological revolution, but the kids were the same. These were kids I could have gone to high school with myself. And that's why I started writing juvenile, level work. It's why I started writing MG and YA, and my first published works were actually in the YA category. So I sort of credit that whole time of teaching those kids with what happened with my first book. So it was kind of cool. You do things sometimes, to get a little bit of cash, pay some bills, and sometimes it gives you, especially in writing, I'm sure it's happened to you too, those things that you do in real life wind up feeding your work.
Oh yeah. I went through this time, when the Need series was coming out, where I was like, I'm not going to be able to survive as a writer for the rest of my life because that never happens. So I'm going to be an emergency dispatcher for police and fire and ambulance up here where I live in Maine. And I was like, I remember the police chief being like, you're just doing this for stories, aren't you? And I was like, yes, but also my resume is going to be so blank if all it has is writer on it. And he was laughing, but the stories were great. You get to interact with people who are different than you are.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I was thinking about your mom, who obviously is the best mom ever. I'm like, what? But also about how your music lessons, not only did they expose you to kids and, you know, different people to write for and got your imagination going that way, but you're a big vintage movie lover, you're a musician, and like you have all these artistic interweavings. Do you know what I mean? Do you think that impacts how you write your books? Like, do you think the music gives you like a lyricism of language or like an understanding of sound?
I think written works, even non, you know, prose instead of poetry, all have a rhythm. Right. And different genres have different kinds of rhythms. You know, there's a different pacing to an action book or a mystery as opposed to a romance. And, you know, I think it's interesting. A lot of times when we talk about plotting books, mm-hmm. we talk about beats, right? You know, what happens at a certain point in a book, you know, and at the 10% mark in a romance, you know, or, you know, there's a meet cute at a certain point in a romance to set it off, or at the 50% point, you've got, you know, danger happening in your mystery, but there are different plot points you want to hit in different genres. And I think it's really, I think that that's an interesting word that we use, right? That we all talk about the beats. So we all sort of, you know, somewhere in there, we're all recognizing that there is a rhythm in the English language, and it's not just, you know, on a sentence by sentence structure. There's a rhythm to a story that we all kind of, you know, expect to come across when we're reading that genre. So I think that plays a big part in it. And I'm an old, you know, lit junkie too. So I love the old classics as much as I love stuff that's coming out now. And yeah. I think there's, you know, it's kind of plays into that vintage movie thing you were talking about. The cool thing is there's how much our storytelling has changed mm-hmm. over time. You know, you hear the advice you often hear to new writers is go out there and read some new fiction, especially if you're coming to writing, you know, for YA or MG, you want to read those contemporary works because storytelling has changed since you were an MG yeah. or YA reader, right? It's changed over, you know, the span of time so quickly. So we change the way we tell stories, the way we open stories, the way we, especially I think the way we open stories, how we draw a reader into a story. Now you kind of want to come out with your guns blazing, yeah. you know, and those old, you know, the classics, oftentimes you open a classic and it starts out with atmosphere. You know, it's the castle and the moor and what is growing outside. And this can go on for two or three pages. And you think no contemporary reader would put up with this, right? Yeah, so it's so interesting the way we change our approach to telling stories. But I think all of those, you know, influences come into play when you sit down to tell a story. Yeah.
I feel sad that this episode is so short because you have so much to say that's so helpful, which is always indicative on your blog. You have a ton of resources and links and projects, and we'll put a link in the story notes, the episode notes for that too, for the podcast. But helping potential writers seems really, really important to you. And I know you're going to talk about publishing a little bit. Maybe we'll have to have a second interview if you survive this one. Do you have any advice for writers out there? Like, just, you know, something that you wish somebody had told you 10 years ago when you started publishing?
You know, as far as craft goes, one of the things that has helped me the most since I started writing full time is an idea journal. I am such an idea junkie. I can get distracted. You know, every new idea that comes along my way is the shiny new thing I want to chase. And it's especially easy to want to chase it when you're, you know, 150 pages into a book and you know where you want it to end up and you're in that sluggy middle, which is my least favorite part of a book.
Yeah.
You know, and you just don't know how you're going to get there anymore. But I can get so distracted and I want to start a new project. My favorite part is the first few lines of a new project. I think that's the most exciting. I think it's even more exciting than the end. Yeah. Is starting a new project. So I always want to get distracted. So I would do that all the time. I would think, oh, I can juggle this new thing while I'm writing this other thing. And it never worked. And I would always, I would have 43 unfinished projects and they were all in the sluggy middle. So now I started when I was, I started keeping an idea journal so right. that I could write down whatever the shiny object was, whatever, you know, and just get that out of me, right, in a journal and put it aside and say, I'm going to get to that later and then go back to the task at hand. So I don't forget it. I remember why it was important to me. I would write down, you know, what had triggered it, why I thought it was interesting, how it might fit in with some other things I had drafted previously. And I just set it aside and say, I'm just going to do that later and get back to the project in hand and figure out what I'm doing here with this thing. But I think it was, and at this point, I've got two filing cabinets full of notebooks and torn off scraps of paper and old stories I've ripped out. They're just ideas. They're just things from my idea journal. And the cool thing about it is that it can actually help those middles, right? If you're constantly keeping track of ideas, you can go back when you hit a sluggy point, you can go to your idea folders and flip through them and find sometimes a character or a plot twist or an idea that can help you out of the jam you're in. With your current work in progress.
That's just so smart. That's so smart.
It's really helped me more than anything else. And also drafting out of order.
Oh yeah. I had I work with a lot of writers, and a lot of them, you know, get writer's block, and mm-hmm. part of it is that they're stuck on a scene, and part of it that they think they have to write linearly, like they have to write exactly following the plot. And I remember when I was at my MFA program in Vermont College, I forgot the official name, Vermont College of Fine Arts.
Yeah.
The worst promo there ever, or plug. But they, Allison McGee was teaching there, and she was talking about how she writes sometimes like you, how like she'll just write her scenes. She prints them all out, which kills a lot of trees, moves them around on the floor in front of her, and then puts them into this linear pattern after she's done that first draft. And how I told my editor at the time, who was Andrew Carr, mm-hmm. And he was like, that is the sexiest thing I have
ever. It works. It really does. I've done similar things in the drafting process where I know what I want to write about and I just start writing the scenes that are the most interesting to me, and they don't have to be connected. Just, I know I want this to happen, X to happen, Y to happen, Z to happen. I just write those scenes, and just get them out. And then writing those scenes trigger some other ideas that, you know, for new scenes. And then suddenly you've got 25,000-30,000 words of just cool scenes that you can now connect with a narrative thread. And it sounds like that would be the biggest mess in the world, but it's actually, a lot of times it's the shortest distance between, you know, first line and a finished product. Because
it's brave. You're thinking outside the box, you know?
Yeah.
So good. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you. I think I did. But I was so excited. I apologize.
No, I was going to say, you know, you know, back to the sluggy middles, you know, you can overwrite sometimes. And what you're trying to do is just brainstorm sometimes. And you can spend the better part of a month writing chapter after chapter after chapter, just basically trying to brainstorm your way out of whatever you've written, whatever corner you've written yourself into. But a lot of times if you just write those really cool scenes, you know, you're not trying to get from point A to point B, you know. And what's interesting to me is sometimes you write so many chapters kind of exposition that are unnecessary when you're writing linearly, that really you don't need much of anything to connect scenes a lot of times, especially if you're writing something more action driven. What you need is a couple of paragraphs at the beginning of the next chapter. You know, it doesn't have to be a ton. And sometimes when you're writing linearly, you wind up axing, you know, 10, 20,000 words from a project just because you were trying to generate ideas and get to the next scene, when really all you needed to do was just do the next scene.
Oh, that's a great truth.
Yeah. That's
like an epiphany level. I think that's so great. And you're so great to hang out with us today, and I hope you'll come back sometime.
Absolutely. I think we could do this.
I feel like I could talk to you for like 5 hours. I wanted, before we go, for you to be able to, you know, because you're being so gracious and spent time with us and giving us the gifts of your knowledge and your experience, if you wanted to plug or promote or tell anyone about something that's important to you or that you're promoting or one of your books or anything, it's all you.
Okay. A lot of the rights to some of that early YA stuff has reverted back to me, and I'm in the process of re-releasing a lot of those early works. And the first one I've done is Playing Hurt. It's one of my faves too. It was really fun to get back into it. So anyone who would like to see the new version, I have updated it. I've added some new scenes. It's available now, wide release. It's available as an ebook, paperback, hardback. The links are all up on my website at hollyschindler.com. And there will be a sequel eventually.
Yay.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so exciting. You're definitely one of my favorite lit junkies out there. And her books are really good too. So thank you so much for being here, Holly.
Thank you. And congratulations on your The Places We Hide release too. I thoroughly enjoyed that. I know that's your first mystery, and it was fantastic.
You're the kindest. This is why I love you. You're just like a flatterer, and you're so lovely, and you're so smart. You're the best, Holly. Thank you so much.
Excellent. Thank you for having me, Carrie. It's been great.
Thanks for listening.
We really appreciate you listening to the podcast. You can find us everywhere. And you've already found us once if you're listening now. And like Apple Music, iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, and more. Just Google Dogs Are Smarter Than People. Then like and subscribe. The notes to the podcast are also always on carriejonesbooks.blog. Carrie is spelled C-A-R-R-I-E. I realized I don't always tell people that. And we'd like a shout out. The music that we've clipped and shortened in this podcast is awesome and is made available through the Creative Commons license. Who's the artist and what song is this? It's Night Owl by Brooke for Free. You can go to the podcast episode notes and find a link right to it.
Listen to that fantastic music all the time.
Yeah, man.
So, what do we got going on in our lives, love?
Well, right now, we've released the book, The Places We Hide, which is an adult mystery.
And it's good.
It's so good.
I mean, obviously I'm biased, but it truly is good.
John just thinks it's really good because the main character he thinks is him.
Oh, yeah, well, you know, possibly.
Also, I am doing a course. I've started a course.
A course. What kind of course?
It's a bit like a distance MFA program, and people get to hang out together.
Yeah.
In a Zoom chat once every month, and I give them feedback for their stories every month. They submit 20 pages, and there's a Facebook group, and we have a bunch of people already signed up, which is awesome. Because.
So it's like a writing course.
It's a writing course. That's also very supportive and helps build community. So you get direct feedback from me and love from other writers.
I know. Any course that you're involved with has the instructors more. There's also like a life coaching course.
That's very
Because you're so awesome.
That's very sweet.
I know.
There's more information about it on my website. Once again, carriejonesbooks.blog.
You can never say that too much.
carriejonesbooks.blog.
And what else are you doing, love?
Am I doing anything else?
Well, I mean,
sorry. Yeah,
you edit people's work.
I'm teaching at the Writing Barn. I edit people's work. You can find me on Readzy. I'm writing my own books. What else are you doing, boo?
Me?
Yeah, man.
Oh, I'm just doing my regular work. But we are going to start formatting people's books also.
Woo!
And we will be doing print edition and
ebooks. So we're all in one.
Types of formatting styles.
Right. So you can come to us and we will clean up your grammar.
Full service.
Yeah, man.
Book prep / publishing house.
Yeah. Only thing we're not doing is cover design.
Yep.
Yep. Pretty cool.
Once again, that will have to land back on your desk, love, because Unless people want stick figures for the covers. You all the time. The funniest
cover ever. That'd be awesome.
Every book's a kid's book here.
Like 80s font. I'm like,
yeah, right.
Oh, that'd be amazing.
I'll do the Kama Sutra cover with stick figures.
No. It always goes back.
No, it's just an example of how it could be deceptive because it's stick figures, but you never know what's inside.
Anyways, we're going to end it here. Thank you for listening.
Thank you so much for listening.
We really appreciate it. And we stay healthy and strong, okay?
Yeah.
Because we need you in this world. Stay strong.